Okay. Thank you. I saw a, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this before. It's Gary Larson. He does this cartoon called The Far Side. And I've talked about him a little bit. The funny thing about Gary is he does a lot of things with animals. And when he was about 18 years old, he went to go to apply for a job. And on his way to this job, he actually hit a dog and killed this dog. Well, he was on his way to the SPCA to interview for a job, so he figured that was his sign that he probably shouldn't do that. So he spent the rest of his life drawing cartoons. He has this one cartoon where he has Moses as a kid sitting at a table, and his mom's behind him washing dishes, and it shows Moses with a bowl of milk. I guess it had a cereal in it, and he went like this, and the milk was parting in the bowl. So it's just kind of a cute little thing. I tend to think of it in the same manner that Gil talked about it. If you've seen the movie The Ten Commandments, whatever it was a very visible sign that they would have seen in front of them. But it still took faith for them to realize that they needed to cross over and go through this journey because, guess what? This is the first time this had ever happened. They'd never seen this before, right? So they had no evidence to say, hey, I've been here, done this, got the T-shirt. They're going through this process, and they've got this dry land that is presented in front of them. So the miracle is really two parts. The first part is the parting of the water, but the second part is that the land is dry. It's not wet. It's not muddy. It's not where they're going to sink into the ground. Okay? So we've got two different things that have happened here. But, of course, when the Egyptians got to them and started to cross, they were prevented from doing so. Not that they couldn't do it, they were prevented from doing so. The wheels of the chariots were caused to fall off of the chariots, which kept them from being able to cross over. So, by faith, they went through this process. And let me see if I have a question here yet. I don't think so. Nope, not yet. And then in verse 30, it says, by faith. So now we're going to leave the Exodus story. You have a point.
So you brought up the thought that it's really helpful when we are asked to do something we've never done before or that we've never understood as anyone ever done before. And that truly is a great example for us. And so many of the scriptures demonstrate the characters throughout history.
And that was going to be one of my questions. It's okay. When was the second time we had... But, you know, the interesting thing is that God makes it very clear what his direction is for us. And as long as we have faith that he's going to deliver on the promises that he has stated, then we should have clarity of mind to know that we're headed in the right direction and we're following the right path. Hang on just a second, Aaron. Irene.
Yeah.
And that's why I pointed out what I did with the Passover, because it was his direction and his lead that caused the rest of the children to follow suit. And that's why I think it's very clear that they that it points out it was his faith that caused this to happen. They just followed what he was doing. Aaron. Right.
You've got to get a lot of people across, and you can't be slugging through the mud.
That's right.
That one little thing, dry land, has always kind of blew my mind. Because I know I've been playing in the mud since I was a kid. It's really hard to make drop. You've got to leave them in the sun.
Yep. And I'm sure they didn't stop in the middle and take selfies. And Well, that's true. But that leads me to my question here. I have a bonus question on here. Why are there no outside writings today confirming the Exodus story? Okay. You want to expound on that?
Well, the Egyptians that followed them, which would have been the outside people, they didn't live through that.
That's right. So the entire army of Pharaoh was there. And they were all destroyed. So now you think about this. Pharaoh is the most powerful king on the face of the earth at that time. And his army has just been destroyed. You think he would write about it and put it into the annals of your history? Absolutely not. So we know that the story happened, and we have other reasons to know that it happened, but the Egyptians did not add it to anything, so there is nothing we've been able to find and probably will ever find in Egyptian lore that would show the Exodus story. However, we do know that the story itself carried beyond the Israelites. If we go to Joshua, the second chapter, and we go to verse 10, if somebody wants to read that for me, Joshua chapter 2 and verse 10. This is Rahab talking. You want to read it? Okay. Okay, so we have Rahab, who is in Jericho, and she has heard this story, which means that all of the Jericho people would have heard this story. The difference for her, though, is what do you think drove her faith? She believed this story. She believed that this happened. And so because she believed it, she was fearful of what they were going to do because it had gone before them. Now, it wasn't uncommon for messengers to go from city to city when things were happening, because they would either look for replacements, replenishments, whatever it might be. And so there is a possibility that as they were walking through this area and going through this process of conquering, it would have gone before them, and so the Jericho people would have known that they were coming, that they were coming. Cecil. The Jericho?
Yeah.
No, because the Philistines were on the coast.
Okay.
Yeah, that was later.
The hearing of something that apparently only happened amongst the Jews on that trip away from Egypt, and apparently Egyptians didn't know about it as far as having witnessing it. And so for that information to get permeated throughout the heathen nations, what we're talking about, right?
That's a good point. I think that we know that his will was dispensed. I mean, Nineveh. Somehow Nineveh got hold of the stories, and they had faith in God. So it wasn't just limited to the Jews. We know that. And Melchizedek is another person who shows up on the scene. So obviously these stories went way beyond the borders. Jill. But it was 150,000, I think, was the number that went into the... It was almost his entire army.
Right, but yeah. There were some Egyptians left, and I'm sure... Well, Pharaoh didn't want to share. I'm sure they shared.
Well, yeah, but back then, you didn't defy the king. You definitely didn't defy the king.
No.
So they didn't go back home and go... You know,
everything
they... Yeah, exactly. They probably were like, everything was good. Everything went well. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But that's a good point. So the idea here is, you know, again, it's a secondary thing, but this is why even through all of the archaeological things they have found in Egypt, they have never found a story that's related to the Exodus story.
What they have found are carts, chariots in the city.
Yeah, and that's what I want to go over this one of these days when I go through this. There's some fascinating things that have happened in the last couple of months with the entire process of the Red Sea crossing, and I don't want to get into it because it'll take me off to things that I love talking about, but just put it this way, there's some really, really interesting finds that they've been able to uncover. They have found corals that are in the shapes of chariots and chariot wheels in the sea. And so they've been able to deduce and ascertain that these were definitely man-made. They were not from the seabed by itself. So.
Are there the Egyptians that were saved? They're just on the other side.
They're on the other side? Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes and no. If you look at the terrain and the topology, there's a good possibility they would not have seen it other than those who went forward because of the way the hills and the valleys were in that area.
Yeah, but Exodus 14, it talks about the bodies of the Egyptians being on the shore.
Yeah, no, I see that. Again, the bigger point here is that they did not go back and write in their histories that their army had been destroyed by a pillar of fire and water that came down and consumed them. That was something they kind of left out. Yeah.
In this case, history was written by those in Israel.
Yeah. Okay, so verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were circled for 7 days. Now, this is an interesting story because if you've studied Joshua, first of all, Joshua was a military man. And so the first thing he does, as any good military commander would do, is he went to survey the city. He went out there to plot and understand what he needed to do in order to take the city, which is what, again, any good commander would do. And God stayed him from doing that and said, this is what I want you to do. So, again, we're not going to get into the story here, but think about it from this perspective. You've got this congregation of people walking around the walls of the city. And they keep walking around it for 7 days. Not doing anything, they're just walking around. And you can imagine how that felt when you're listening to the comments being made, the jeers, the ridicule, the things that they're throwing over the side of the walls, touting how big these walls are. And if you know anything about these cities, Rahab was living in the wall, if that tells you anything about the size of the wall. So these are not, you know, walls like 4 inches, you know, wide like we have today. These are walls. And so they march around for 7 days. And what do they do on the seventh day? They shout, and what else? Blow the horns. And what happens? The walls fell, and they didn't touch the walls. They collapsed on their own. Okay? Now, why do you think God did it this way? So the whole story we've seen up to this point, it has been God delivering them from Egypt. It has not been anything that they have done on their own. And this is very important because he is showing them that he is their God and that he is there to take care of them. So they walk around, the walls fall, and they did this because of their obedience to God's command. They did it by faith, and their faith was rewarded by God fulfilling his promise to bring down those walls. So again, if they had walked around 6 times and said, you know what, I'm tired, I don't want to do this the next day, the walls wouldn't have come down. And we see this over and over and over again, the 7 dippings in the Jordan. I mean, there's all these different stories where it takes 100% obedience and faith in order for God to invoke his promise, right? Not just part of it. And again, same thing for us. We have to be fully committed 100% in order to enter into his rest. 7 days a week. That's right. Okay, so verse 31. By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. So we talked about this. Her faith, which was very simple and very elementary. Hey, we've heard the story. We know this is something that's happened. But it was very real to her. She had heard reports at how God had done these things with the Israelites. And she realized that God had determined to bring the Israelites to Jericho. So again, if you think about it, the story here is, if you go back and look at it, it says, we have heard how who dried up the water? The Lord. Not you, not Moses. The Lord dried up the water. So that's really significant because, again, the word Lord here is the word Yahweh. It's the personal covenant name of God. That's right. So they all learned very quickly who was in charge. That's right. And that's the same, if you think about it, that's Jeremiah 31, right? It's the same thing. All will come to know him. Everybody is going to bow at the knee. Whether you believe or not, or whether you're atheist or agnostic, whatever you want to call yourself, you will come to that moment where you will say, he is Lord. So Rahab put her faith into action and was spared when those about her were destroyed. Okay, so we get to verse 32, and he says, and what more shall I say? For the time will fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and other prophets. So he's got a bunch of people listed here. All right, so we're going to go through a little bit of study, and we're going to talk about them. Yes, sir. And I think it's important for us to understand that God made it very clear that she was a harlot. And there's no sugarcoating this. This is not a different word for a different time. This is what it is. And so God makes it very clear that this person who lived this life was spared because of her faith. And that's important. All right, so we look at all of these men that he mentions, and they're not given in chronological order. So this is significant because he's not giving a history here. He's just merely stating individuals that he has a list to share. Okay? So we have, in chronological order, if you want to write this down, I think it's question 20. We have Barak or Barak, depending on how you want to say that. Then we have Gideon. And then Jephthah. Then Samson. I'll let you guess between Samuel and David, who came first? Samuel. And then between the prophets and David, who came first? David. And then the prophets would be last. All right, so let's look at each one of these individuals real quick. So who was Gideon? He was a judge. What number judge was he? Close. He was five. He was the fifth one. She was counting them. So Gideon was the son of Joash of the tribe of Manasseh. He was the fifth judge of Israel. He was surnamed Jerubbaal. Let Baal plead because of his opposition to Baal. And he broke down his altar and cut down his grove. Of course, we all know the story of Gideon. We're not going to get into that tonight. But Gideon has a faith story as well. And so that's why he's mentioned here in the scripture. Our next character is going to be Barak or Barak. So who is Barak or Barak? So he wasn't necessarily a judge, but he was one of her leaders. He was a right-hand man of Deborah, who was the judge at the time. So he is a leader of Israel, and he is from the tribe of Naphtali. He was really renowned for his great victory, which he gained over the Canaanites. So he led a conquest against the Canaanites and was victorious. Again, you can read about it. It's going to be in Judges chapter 4. And verse 16. All right, next on our list is Samson. And the reason I'm going through them this way instead of in chronological order, because that's the order he lists them here. So who is Samson? He was a judge. What number judge was he? He was towards the bottom. He was the 13th. You're so close. You said 4th and 14th. So he was the 13th judge. And he lived as a what? He was a Nazarite. First time we've seen this in Scripture. So he was a Nazarite from birth. And the first manifestation of his power was when he did what? Killed the lion, right. When he killed the lion. It was a young lion. That was a small one, you know, maybe a couple of pounds. We went up to, if you've ever been up there, this is a place called Cat Haven up towards, as you're going out towards Sierra National Forest. And I love going up there. We took the grandkids up, and at the very end of this tour that they give you of all these cats that they have the lion cage. And we walk up, and they've got this male lion that's sitting next to the fence. And when you look at this fence, you're like, that's really not going to hold him back. And he's got these big, huge paws. They're probably, with both my hands together, that's one paw. He's got it over a big salt block. If you've ever worked with horses, they get those salt blocks. He's got a big salt block. He sees us walking up, and he gives out this amazing roar that just permeates you. And the reason he did that was because he was letting everybody know, this is mine. You're not touching it. What I thought was funny was the lioness was up on a perch above him, and she reached out and slapped him across the head. Tell him to be quiet. He was showing off. We all know who wears the pants in that family, so. But it was pretty impressive. And this was a younger lion. This was not an older lion. It was a very young one, but he was magnificent. And so I think of this story, I think that when we say young lion, this is definitely a lion that nobody else could have taken out. This man had a lot of power, and the power of God was with him. So he took out the lion. He also slaughtered who on several occasions? The Philistines, right? So he was good friends and good buddies with the Philistines. And finally, he killed who? This is a trick question. He killed himself, right? He killed himself. So he knocked down the columns, but it killed 3,000 people because he overthrew the temple of Dagon. That's right, right. And that's in Judges, the 13th chapter through the 16th chapter. So Samson was a Nazarite, the 13th judge, and the faith that he had at that very last story obviously was the big one, because he was able to push over the columns, because he had lost his power, right? He messed around and had lost his abilities. So, yeah, he was blind too, that's right, lost his eyes. Okay, then we're up to Jephthah. So Jephthah is who? Okay, he's a judge. Which judge?
He was the judge that made a vow.
Okay, judge that made a vow. He was a ninth judge. Very good. So he was the son of Gilead by a concubine, and he was distinguished particularly for his victories over the Ammonites and the Ephraimites in Judges 11 and 12. But Cecil brought up something interesting about Jephthah. What you want to say again? What he did?
After that, he came back to his locale, and apparently he was feeling pretty good about himself. And he swore to God that he would, thinking that a goat or sheep would come out of his tent. He said, "Whatever comes out of the tent, that will I sacrifice to my God for this victory." And he just didn't realize that it was his guard that came out of the tent first. And so, because of his vow, he had to sacrifice his God.
That's right. And so he did. And I find it somewhat interesting because she, from the story, doesn't
resist.
So.
She did take 3 months off.
She did, yeah. She. But what a story. But it was his faith that led him to do what he did and to commit to the vow and stay with the vow. Okay, so ninth judge, and he is known for his victories over the Ammonites and the Ephraimites. All right, we have a little-known character in the Scriptures named David. So who is David? Second king of Israel. Okay, and actually he's technically the third king if you really get down to brass tactics. He's the third king. There's a little-known section there where there was another guy that popped up on the scene for just a few minutes, it seems like. It wasn't very long, but there was a king in between, but he wasn't recognized throughout all the tribes of Israel, so that's why he's not listed as a king. He was a coup. So David is the only king mentioned in this list. And, of course, he is the son of Jesse. And he was always distinguished for his trust and confidence in God. And boy, do we have some stories about David. Now, I mentioned this before. One of the main things that we see between David and some of the others who have sinned in their life is that David came to God with a contrite heart. When we look at a similarity to someone like Judas, Judas was sorrowful, but he didn't have a contrite heart. Peter was sorrowful and had a contrite heart. David was sorrowful and had a contrite heart. So it's not the sin that that would have kept him solely from God. It was the fact that he repented and came to God in that contriteness. And I think that that's important for us because we are going to fail at times. We're going to slip up. But if we continue to come to God with an open heart, and come on our knees and our humility, that God's going to see fit to forgive us of our sins, just like he did David. All right. And our last person here is Samuel. Who is Samuel? Okay, he was a prophet. He was a judge. What number judge was he? Somewhere down the bottom of the list. He is number 15, and he is the last judge of Israel. So the interesting thing about Samuel is he was established from his childhood because he was given to God as part of an agreement with his mother. Because if you remember the story, she said, if you give me a son, I will dedicate and devote him to you. And so God does give her a son, opens up her womb, as the Bible says. And from the time of his childhood, he was given to God. And so he was distinguished for his piety. And I have a quote here from 1 Samuel 3 and verse 20. It's, quote, "And all of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, knew that he was established to be a prophet of the Lord." So he was very well known to the Israelites. He was not a man of a faint heart. He rallied Israel against the Philistines. He recaptured the ark. And then our last group was the prophets, which I didn't put on here because they all had different occupations. But none of these were in a position of outstanding dignity when they were called. They were all called from some lowly position. If you go and look at every single person that was called, you wouldn't have looked across the room and said, okay, there you go. He's going to be the next prophet of Israel. That wasn't the way it worked. God would take people that were humble and meek, ones that were dirty and ragged, ones that didn't necessarily have a great presence in the people's minds, and he would use them to do his bidding and to preach the word. And he says in verse 33, so we're going to go through the list here, he says, all these people who by faith conquered kingdoms. So who conquered kingdoms? Barak, Gideon, David conquered kingdoms. Performed acts of righteousness. Who do we know that did acts of righteousness? All of them. Samuel in particular. Obtained promises. Okay, David. Shut the mouths of lions. This is an easy one. And Daniel, right? Well, Daniel wasn't in the list, though. So so we know Daniel was shut up or closed up the mouths of lions, too. Yes, he did. Yeah, 1 Samuel 17. Yeah. But we often think of Samson and him killing the young lion. Verse 34, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to fight. So again, he's going through all of these things that they did. And he's showing faith by what? Action, works. Again, it is because they did these things that they showed their faith to God. So we cannot, under any circumstance, say, I believe in God and do nothing to show faith in action. Well, we could, but it's not going to get you very far. Yes, sir.
So then my question is, so who claimed glory for each of these actions?
Well, we know that because in the very beginning of chapter 11, it says that they all became witnesses of their actions, and God used that to witness what they did so that the Hebrews then would understand what they did, which, of course, in turn is a witness for us. What's that? I'm sorry.
Who claimed the glory for those actions?
God did. God did. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, they definitely didn't do it for themselves. So out of weakness were made the strong. They became valiant in battle. They turned to flight the armies of the aliens. It's quite an impressive story. Quite an impressive group of people. And I think when I was a kid, I used to have problems. I'd say, wow, I can't be like these people. You know, they're just exceptional people. God just, he really knew these people well. I'm just a lowly person. But what it shows me is that they didn't come from great position. They all came from a place that wasn't elevated through really anything that they did on their own. God gave them what they needed in order to survive and understand his desire, his will, but it was still their responsibility to have faith in him and to show that action. God couldn't do that for them. That's right. And he knows what each one of us are capable of, too. Okay, I'm a few minutes over, but thank you for your time tonight. We'll go through our, in about 5 minutes, we'll start our devotion.